Vatsudeva Vaya.
You chanting at home?
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So can you hear me at home? I see some photos. I see Pretty Lakshana,
yes,
Srimurti, Dipti, Prishni.
Yes, Prabhu.
And JD.
I think it's Janvi.
Yeah. Good. Welcome to the brave new world.
Preeti Lakshana Madhaji is trying to...
I think she's already here.
She's already there?
She's on hold.
She's telling she's not able to join. Can you, you know the stuff, right?
I think she would have put on hold at her end. Maybe ask her to... There should be an option
here. Alright, so your icon is showing that you're on hold.
I will remove.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, you can log out, please. Yeah. Albir Shu was here?
Yeah, he was here. Sitting. I think he's going to bring his laptop.
Yeah. So, others, are they able to hear?
Yes, I've got a hello from Srimurti.
Okay.
Who else? Prishni. Dipti?
Yes, Prabhu, we can hear you.
And Janavi?
Prabhuji, she's on mute.
Yeah, she's on mute.
She's on mute.
Yeah, this is, she's on mute.
Okay. Yes, Preeti Lakshana Madhaji. No, the join button, what we sent you, in that email, there's a join button, right? You press the button. Yeah, the meeting invitation, join button, you can just join. Or you can go to the application and there will be a meeting coming up where you can press the join button.
I just went to the web.
Yeah.
Onto the web, to join on the web.
Meetings. In the application, you had to go
calendar.
To the meetings.
Calendar.
Calendar. Meetings. Meetings are there, right? Calendar.
Yeah, calendar.
Calendar, meetings are there,
join
and
button.
Join button is there.
Just click on join.
Yeah. On 21st, today's date, 21st March, you can check. Can you see or no?
Ask her to change this view to day.
Can you change the view to day? Or, okay. Yeah, and go to 21st, then you can see the whole meeting blog from 2 to 5. One second.
And can I hear them louder from my end?
I'll see.
On the left side, did you go, one second, did you go to the calendar? Okay, on the calendar, on the right-hand side, top, there is a, you can choose day, work week, week. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's it, yeah. So, pre-election of the joint.
This is the volume.
Yep. And what about Janavi Jeevan?
Yeah, the contacts, these are the people.
She's connected, I saw.
Yeah.
She's connected. Can you hear me, Janavi Jeevan?
But she's kept mute herself.
She's kept herself mute.
You can turn the video on.
Changes to turn the video off.
Yeah, the video is on.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, systems go. So we're beginning this ultra-modern study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 2. And we left off in chapter 2 at verse 17. That's where we, verse 16. We're going to look at verse 16 of the second chapter. And thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the super soul of all living entities, and who vanquishes all the fear of his devotees, entered the mind of Vasudeva in full opulence. So, we usually will look at some of the statements that Srila Prabhupada makes in his purport, what he says in the Krishna book, and especially we like to look at Vishwanath Chakravarti the core. And I'll start with a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti the core, which helps us to understand what Prabhupada's purport. And the Lord is called Vishvatma in this verse, the super soul of all living entities. And Vishvanath Chakravarti, the course, says that he is addressed as the soul of the universe because he is actually the object of prema, pure love of God, for the whole universe. And the word Amsa indicates that all the avatars, such as the Purusha avatars, are included within Krishna. Bhaga refers to the six opulences or all good qualities. Thus, Krishna appeared in the mind of Vasudeva along with all his expansions and opulences. So, then if we look at Srila Prabhupada's purport, you see how he explains those exact same things as we get from the Acharyas. In his own words. So Srila Prabhupada's purport, the word Vishvatma refers to one who is situated in everyone's heart. And he quotes a verse from the Bhagavad Gita 1861. Another meaning of Vishvatma is the only lovable object for everyone. So again, we see as Vishwanath Chakravarti the core is stating that he's the object of prema. Generally, when we speak of prema, we speak of a very high, purely transcendental love of God. Srila Prabhupada expresses that in such a way that from the very beginning, anyone reading his books can also relate themselves to trying to develop some love for God. So he says the only lovable object for everyone. So you see there, the way that Srila Prabhupada expresses it is just a very inclusive statement for anyone who reads his books. Because of forgetfulness of this object, people are suffering in this material world, but if one fortunately revives his old consciousness of loving Krishna and connects with Vishvatma, one becomes perfect. And as you see in his, a little bit of a purport, meaning that anyone can come to this platform of prema or love if they revive their Krishna consciousness. The Lord is described in the third canto, 3:2:15, so this is the same verse that Vishwanath Chakravarti the core describes as Paravaresho Maharamsa Yuktohi Ajopi Jato Bhagavan. Although unborn, the Lord, the master of everything, appears like a born child by entering the mind of a devotee. The Lord is already there within the mind, and consequently, it is not astonishing for him to appear as if born from a devotee's mind. The word Avivesha signifies that the Lord appeared within the mind of Vasudeva. There was no need for a discharge of semen. That is the opinion of Sripad, Sridhar Swami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In the Vaishnava Toshani, Srila Sanatana Goswami says that Krishna consciousness was awakened within the mind of Vasudeva. And here, you see again how Srila Prabhupada expresses the appearance of Krishna within the mind of Vasudeva, that Prabhupada says that consciousness was awakened within the mind of Vasudeva. Srila Viraragava Acharya also says that Vasudeva was one of the demigods and that within his mind the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as an awakening of consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada equates full consciousness with Krishna consciousness as also the appearance of the Personality of Godhead, non-different. Then, in the Krishna book, chapter 2, Prabhupada says it in this way: after this arrangement, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is always ready to protect his unalloyed devotees, entered within the mind of Vasudeva as the Lord of the whole creation with full inconceivable potencies. It is understood in this connection that Lord Krishna first of all situated himself in the unalloyed heart of Vasudeva and was then transferred to the heart of Devaki. He was not put into the womb of Devaki by seminal discharge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable potency, can appear in any way. It is not necessary for him to appear in the ordinary way, by seminal injection within the womb of a woman. And so we see that within Srila Prabhupada's purports and his comments in the Krishna book, that he understands the general misconception and goes out of his way to make sure that what is being stated addresses those misconceptions, such as being born through seminal discharge. He makes a point of that. And we also see here that in the Krishna book, you know, Srila Prabhupada also mentions that Vasudeva, the Lord of the whole creation, he entered within the mind of Vasudeva with full inconceivable potencies. So, we have heard that Krishna previously ordered Yogamaya, his chief potency, to transfer Balaram to the womb of Rahini and to help Vasudeva get out of the prison and transfer Krishna to the care of Yashoda and Nanda. So the Lord's Yoga Maya has appeared. And at the same time, when Krishna appears within the within the womb of Devaki, being transferred from the heart of Vasudeva, He is there with his full inconceivable potency. So even though his full potency in one sense is acting externally from Devaki and Vasudeva and Krishna, the yoga maya is performing all sorts of tasks apparently in a separate way, but the nature of Krishna is that he's always full. So even when his potencies are acting as if a complete and separate unit, still they never separate from him as the personality of Godhead. So in another sense, his full potency is not only acting to assist in those various pastimes, but is also along with him within the heart of Vasudeva and within the womb of Devaki. And when the Lord appears, his full inconceivable potencies appear along with the Lord, who is never separated from his inconceivable potencies. And so that's very important, because we've had a lot of discussions about the activities of yoga maya, and understanding the inconceivable potency of the Lord and the inconceivable nature of his potencies. That therefore in the Bhagavad Gita, as we go through this 10th canto and we're discussing the personality of Godhead Krishna, who all the expansions are within and all his potencies are within him, it is an inconceivable topic. Therefore, and there are many conceptions of God all over the world, and, you know, within Christianity, within the Muslim religion, within Judaism, but all of them, no matter in what way the Lord appears and in what manner the Lord appears and by what name we call him, everyone in the world should worship and meditate upon the Lord in the same identical way. As mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verse number 9. Kavim puranam anusasitaram ano aniyamsam anusmaridya savasya dataram achinchirupam ajitjivanam tamasa parastat. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest. Of course, he knows everything means he knows past, present and future. He is the oldest means that he is the source of everything, who is the controller. All energies are under his control and automatically fulfill his will, who is smaller than the smallest. He is not only the greatest in that there is nothing that exceeds him, but he is also the smallest within the heart of every living entity and within every atom, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception. Because he's beyond all material conception, he is inconceivable, and who is always a person. So although he is everything, he is spread everything everywhere, he knows everything, he maintains everything, at the same time, he's also a person, which means a localized form. So that's inconceivable. Everything here is inconceivable. He is luminous like the sun, and he is transcendental beyond this material nature. So many of the aspects of what we hear describing Krishna, if you spoke to someone from Christianity and they say, oh, your God is different to mine, is it? No. God always has the same God that you're meditating upon has the same qualities as we are meditating upon. It is the same person. And this is where we find the, which it is what helps people to understand Krishna and what helps different personality persons around the world trying to understand God, you know, how they can all find a common ground to meditate upon.
Sorry, Gangeshwar Prabhu, what was the second point? The first was one who knows everything, and you mentioned that means past, present and future.
Yes, and the second point is that he who is the oldest, meaning that he is the beginning of everything.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
I'm paraphrasing because all of that is in that purport to the Gita, so I just paraphrased it quickly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And again, just having a look at the, because there's more in this purport of Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 17. So Srila Prabhupada adds a little bit. So he says that when Vasudeva is sustaining the form of the personality of Godhead within his heart, he appeared just like the glowing sun. And as we saw in that Bhagavad Gita verse, it describes how he is luminous, like the sun. See, same concepts. Whose shining rays are always unbearable and scorching to the common man. The form of the Lord, situated in the pure unalloyed heart of Vasudeva, is not different from the original form of Krishna. The appearance and the form of Krishna anywhere, and specifically within the heart, is called dharma. Dharma refers not only to Krishna's form, but also to his name, his qualities, and his paraphernalia. Everything becomes manifest simultaneously. And then also here you see Srila Prabhupada emphasizing what is described in the Bhagavad Gita, in this summary of how we meditate upon the Lord, that he is always a person. When the Lord is present, we must always remember that one of the qualities of the Lord is he is always a present, and therefore when he is there, his name will be there, his qualities, his form, his paraphernalia, everything will be there simultaneously. And so whatever Krishna has taught in the Bhagavad Gita, these same things are being expanded fully to what our capacity to understand in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so then going back to the purport of verse 17 in Canto 10, Chapter 2, Dharma refers to the place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. In the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no influence of the material energy. Again, same thing quoted in the Gita. Any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present by his name, form, qualities or paraphernalia immediately becomes a dharma. For example, we speak of Vrindavan Dham, Dwarka Dham and Mathura Dham because in these places the name, fame, qualities and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are always present. Similarly, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a dham, and thus he becomes so extraordinarily powerful that not only his enemies but also people in general are astonished to observe his activities because he is unapproachable. His enemies are simply struck with wonder. So last week we discussed how when, you know, in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Ram can refer to the three Rams, Balaram, Lord Ramchandra, and Parashuram. And someone questioned, oh, but Parashuram is Shakta Vaishavata. And here is the answer to that, that Asakta Vaishavata means that within the heart, the Lord is there, present in the form, and their heart is like a dham, and therefore the Lord is fully present within the heart of the jiva, in the same way that the Lord was fully present within the heart of Vasudeva, and therefore it's not improper to consider that when we chant Hare Krishna Hare Ram, we can refer to Balaram, Lord Ramchandra, or the Satyavaishavata, Lord Parashuram. So, and of course, here, as Prabhupada has hinted to, that, you know, his enemies are simply struck with wonder. We'll actually see this in these pastimes, how even Kamsa, who epitomizes the atheist, even he was struck with wonder and was conscious that Vishnu, this all-powerful personality, who is all-pervading in everyone's hearts, had appeared. So, now, let's go to text number 18 of this second chapter of the 10th canto. Thereafter, accompanied by plenary expansions, the fully opulent Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all auspicious for the entire universe, was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki. Devaki, having thus been initiated by Vasudeva, became beautiful by carrying Lord Krishna, the original consciousness for everyone, the cause of all causes, within the core of her heart, just as the east becomes beautiful by carrying the rising moon. And another description of that we get from the Garga Samhita says that when Lord Krishna, who awards fearlessness to everyone, entered Devaki, she shone as if a great flash of lightning had entered her home. And again, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in his purport that we should note carefully that the Lord was transferred to Devaki not by the ordinary way for a human being, but by diksha, initiation. Thus, the importance of initiation is mentioned here. Unless one is initiated by the right person, who always carries within his heart the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot acquire the power to carry the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of one's own heart. The Supreme Godhead is never separated from his personal opulences. The Lord is always situated with all his plenary expansions, such as Rama, Nrisimha, and Varaha. There is no need to think of the Lord artificially as yogis do. Yogis meditate upon the Supreme Person within the mind. For a devotee, however, the Lord is present, and his presence need only be awakened through initiation by a bona fide spiritual master. So, this is a very important point, that the spiritual master, the personality of Godhead, is fully present within his heart, as realized by the spiritual master, and that is the mercy of the blessings of his spiritual master. And the disciple, similarly, one who has full faith in the spiritual master and the personality of Godhead, in other words, not just the personality of Godhead, but the personality of Godhead and the spiritual master, all the imports of the Vedas are automatically manifest. In other words, Krishna consciousness is manifest within one's heart. Without the transference by the spiritual master, that full Krishna consciousness or the full appearance of Krishna does not manifest. And Prabhupada's point here is that that process of transference of Krishna from the heart of the pure devotee to their faithful disciples means that, you know, it is that faith of the disciple, and they don't need that strenuous effort that the yogis have to endure in order to somehow envision the Lord. It is a lot more automatic. Just by following the spiritual master, one develops that ability to always carry the sword of Krishna within their heart. And of course, therefore, we also see that conversely, one who does not follow the instructions of the spiritual master, chanting the regular Hare Krishna, following the regulatory principles, avoiding the Vaishnava, avoiding the offences, etc., then that diminishes our ability to, meditate on spiritual subject matters in Krishna consciousness, which is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4:28-59. That same point is mentioned there. So, and
what was that? Bhagavatam 4?
Yeah, Canto 4, chapter 28, text number 59. That same point is mentioned there, that by, you know, the spiritual master gives the process by which we can become free from material contamination. And if we don't follow that, that material contamination reduces our ability to think of spiritual matters. Just like, you know, if we eat Krishna Prasad, it helps us to actually think of Krishna. And if we eat food that's not Krishna Prasad, the first thing we will notice is that somehow we forget Krishna more.
Yeah.
And now, also in the purport here, again on this other part, Prabhupada is emphasizing, he says the Lord did not need to live within the womb of Devaki, for his presence within the core of her heart was sufficient to carry him. One is here forbidden to think that Krishna was begotten by Vasudeva within the womb of Devaki and that she carried the child within her womb. So, going back to that previous statement of Srila Prabhupada in his Krishna book, chapter 2, he says, he was not put into the womb of Devaki by seminal discharge. And bear with me for 1 minute. So that purport, the Lord did not need to live within the womb of Devaki, for his presence within the core of her heart was sufficient to carry him. One is here forbidden to think that Krishna was begotten by Vasudeva within the womb of Devaki, and that she carried the child within her womb. So, now, so this is, let's look a little further in the, here, in Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the cause purport, he describes that the Dada Manastar means Devaki held Krishna within the mind. This phrase rules out material conception and birth. And Kasta, or East, a suitable example is given to support this. It was just like in the eastern direction, holding the full moon. It is understood that several days later, Devaki could perceive Krishna within her womb, because later in this chapter, and he quotes verse 41, O fortunate lady, the Supreme Lord has entered your womb. Right, now, having a look at the purport to 10.2.42, we look at this point of the Lord being within the womb of Devaki. And he says, this has been discussed by Jiva Goswami in his Krama Sandhava commentary. Since it was said at first that Krishna was present within the heart of Vasudeva and was transferred to the heart of Devaki, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, how is it that Krishna was now in the womb? He replies, there is no contradiction. From the heart, the Lord can go to the womb, or from the womb, he can go to the heart. Indeed, he can go or stay anywhere. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 5.35, the Lord can stay wherever he likes. Devaki, therefore, in accordance with the desire of her former life, now had the opportunity to seek the benediction of having the Supreme Personality of Godhead as her son, Devaki Nandana. So, in Prabhupada's purport, he's saying that one is here forbidden to think that Krishna was begotten by Vasudeva within the womb of Devaki, or that she carried the child within her womb. In other words, she is not carrying the child within her womb, but it doesn't mean that the Lord can't move from the heart to the womb, or from the womb to the heart. But she's not carrying the child as an ordinary mother must carry a child within the womb. He is not bound there. But nor because he's all-pervading, nor is there any reason why he can't be there.
At the bottom of that 10.2.18 purport, yep, it says, the Supreme Lord's entrance into the womb of Devaki from the heart of Vasudeva was a heart-to-heart relationship.
Yes, but later she moved from the heart to the womb.
That kind of confirmed what you were saying anyway.
Yeah, that's right. The point is, it's a spiritual relationship, a heart-to-heart spiritual relationship, not a material location with anywhere. Yeah, that's right. And so the rest of that purport, as you're quoting that, which I was going to get to next, but the form of the Lord situated in pure unalloyed heart of Vasudeva is not different from the original form of Krishna. The appearance of the form anywhere and specifically within the heart is called Dham. The Dham refers not only to Krishna's form, but to his name, his form, his quality, his paraphernalia. Everything becomes manifest simultaneously. And in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, entered within the mind of Vasudeva with full inconceivable potencies. The form of the Lord, situated in the pure unalloyed heart of Vasudeva, is non-different from the original form of Krishna. His name, his qualities, his paraphernalia, everything becomes manifest simultaneously. So, of course, this rules out all, material concept of the Lord somehow being formed within the womb, because he's there with all paraphernalia. So again, in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus entered the body of Devaki from the body of Vasudeva, without being subject to any of the conditions of an ordinary living entity. Since Krishna was there, it is to be understood that all his plenary expansions, such as Narayan, and incarnations like Lord Narasimha and Varaha, were with him, and they also were not subject to the conditions of material existence. So not only was Krishna there, and this really highlights the fact that, you know, this is not an ordinary presence within her heart or within the womb, because he was present with all these other incarnations as well. And we know that Lord Varaha, if he wants to be, he can be so big that he can pick up the earth. He can be bigger than that. And so in this way, and I'm quoting from the Krishna book, Devaki can become the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second and the cause of all creation. Devaki became the residence of the Absolute Truth. So I'm going to read this part of the Krishna book because it summarizes many verses coming up. And that gives us a little summary as well. That
chapter 2.
Yes, it's chapter 2, Krishna book, and it's summarising many of the verses we're about to read, so it's just get to good, that summary. But because she was within the house of Kamsa, she looked just like a suppressed fire or like misused education. Misused knowledge, which does not benefit the people in general, is not very much appreciated. So Devaki was kept within the prison walls of Kamsa's palace, and no one could see her transcendental beauty, which resulted from her conceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as you quoted, commenting on this verse, Sri Viraraghava Acharya writes, Vasudeva Devaki Jatarayo Hridayo Bhagavata Sambandha, the Supreme Lord's entrance into the womb of Devaki from the heart of Vasudeva was a heart-to-heart relationship. So, text number 19.
Just one question, Prabhu.
Yes.
You know how we're talking about how the Lord, when he appears, he comes with his full potencies?
Yes.
And then, so in the Brahma Vimohana Leela, when how he suddenly, he expands himself and all the cows and the calves are hidden by Lord Brahma.
Yeah.
He appears like, he sort of expands, and you know, there's a picture of how you actually see so many 400 form Vishnus. Is that what it means, that he's there with all his potencies and he can expand in any way he like, and then he can appear or use any of his potencies anywhere?
Yes, that he is always, they're always within him.
Mm.
And Om Panam Ada Panam Idam Panamalachada Panasha. That even if many, many incarnations emanate from the Lord,
mm-hmm.
He is still the complete Supreme Lord,
mm-hmm.
along with all the incarnations.
Yeah.
And even though all the living entities, such as us, within the Lord, and we then he gives us our separate existence, the Lord is always still complete with all of us as well. He doesn't become, so many complete emanations emanate from him, the living entities, the material worlds, and yet he remains in complete balance. And therefore, when Mother Yashoda looked into the mouth of Krishna, she saw everything that was that she could see outside, the sun, the moon, the universe, all living entities, even herself, was there in Krishna's mouth. So that is the inconceivable nature of Krishna. He always remains complete, even if so many emanations are coming from him, including his own expansions and the living entities and the material manifestation and the spiritual manifestation. Like that.
Okay. So can that, before you were saying that Srila Prabhupada pointed out that the process of transfer from the heart to the devotees is automatic by following the spiritual master.
Yes.
So can that inconceivable form appear to yourself?
Yes, that form of Krishna can appear within the heart of anyone who takes the full blessings of the representative of Krishna, the Vaishnavi guru.
Well, that's inconceivable.
Yes. And so it really does give you a greater perspective of the process of initiation or diksha. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, the complete knowledge, if you know Krishna, you know everything. And diksha is a process of giving transcendental knowledge up to the point of full Krishna consciousness. And full Krishna consciousness is non-different from Krishna being manifest fully within one's heart, and one's heart can become a dham. So that's diksha. And basically just Krishna transfers himself when he sees that one is very dear to his devotees, then Krishna very easily transfers himself to their heart. Later on we'll also hear that, you know, Srimati Radharani can also transfer, you know, the rays of Srimati Radharani's mercy also to one's heart. And then that, you know, that prema manifests as pure love of God. So we'll hear about that a little bit later as well. So, and you know, that getting the blessings of Radharani, as we've heard before, means that one must follow in the footsteps of the Brajabasis, who are all following Radharani to get her mercy. And if we do that, then we can get that love of God in the Brajabasi mood, that particular highest form of prema bhakti, and thus relish in loving reciprocation the personality of Godhead who is within our heart. You know, because the personality of Godhead to rasa means that, you know, it's a taste. So you're actually tasting the qualities, the relationship with the personality of Godhead. You know, there's a flavor, there's a rasa, and you taste that. Those tastes come through love, that prema, and therefore the analogy is given of taking the jar off the honey. So, for instance, if you put a jar of honey there, that you may say, oh, the honey is present. So one may say, well, Krishna is in the heart of Vasudeva. Well, Krishna is also in my heart. Yes. one may say, the honey is on the bench. And some would say, yes, the honey is also on my bench. One person would say, yes, but I know how to take the lid off and taste the honey. And the other person says, I don't know how to get the lid off. But it's present. So the presence of the personality of Godhead, but then tasting the presence of the personality of Godhead is according to one's development of prema, and that prema, especially in the mood of Srimati Radharani and the Brajabasis, is the manifestation of Radharani's presence within the heart as well. Well, we'll hear a little bit more about that later. So, verse 19. Devaki then kept within herself the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the foundation of the entire cosmos, but because she was under rest in the house of Kamsa, she was like the flames of a fire covered by the walls of a pot, or like a person who has knowledge but cannot distribute it to the world for the benefit of human society. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada therefore says that knowledge is meant for distribution. He says, India has the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, but unfortunately, for some reason or other, the sublime knowledge of the science of God was not distributed throughout the world, although it is meant for all human society. Therefore, Krishna himself appeared to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and ordered all Indians to take up the cause by distributing the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita throughout the entire world. Yare deke tarikaha Krishna upadesh amara agyai guru hana tara edesh. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. Indians have not done their proper duty by distributing it. Now, therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement has been set up to distribute this knowledge as it is without distortion. Although previously there were attempts to distribute the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, these attempts involved distortion and compromise with mundane knowledge. So you see how that covered knowledge, just like Devaki within the prison, is symbolic of the nature of this world, is that Krishna, who is the personification, the perfection of knowledge manifests in Krishna, and the nature of this world is to cover that knowledge, or to cover Krishna, the absolute truth. Knowledge, we may also say, the absolute truth. Truth is knowledge. Krishna is the absolute truth. The nature of this world is to imprison, to cover. And that, unfortunately, as Prabhupada says, actually even India can be, in one sense, following in the footsteps of Kamsa more so than Krishna, than more so than the devotees, Vasudeva, because their attempt is to cover, to distort with some mundane, like when you put a fire in a jug. That's how Prabhupada is showing, this is how it's practically manifest. And he goes on to say that, Kamsa tried to arrest Krishna consciousness within the house, Bhojendra Gehi, with the result that Kamsa, with all his opulences, was later vanquished. Similarly, the real knowledge of Bhagavad Gita was being choked by unscrupulous Indian leaders, with the result that Indian culture and knowledge of the Supreme were being lost. Now, however, because Krishna consciousness is spreading, the proper use of Bhagavad Gita is being attempted. So the same things were going on 5,000 years ago is an actual event that happened where the personality of Godhead appeared. And the same thing that happens when he appears is that there's an attempt to cover or completely remove the absolute truth. The same thing is the entire history of the world. So it's not a mythological or, you know, analogy. It is the nature of persons in the material world always trying to cover the absolute truth. Then there is good excuses or, you know, so-called justification for this sense gratification, despite the fact that everyone knows that this competitive sense gratification leads to enmity amongst one another, wars, shortages, and so many different things like that. So despite the problem of a world filled with sense gratification, by covering the absolute truth, they get so many bogus justifications, as if that's the only thing that there is, and life is meant for that. So that is the very nature of this world. So, now the other interesting thing about that is, you know, fire kept in a jug. That, of course, if fire is kept in a jug, eventually the fire, you know, sometimes can grow and, you know, literally burn down everything that is covering it, and which is what happens, because it's very powerful, and that's what happened in India as well, as Prabhupada is pointing out, that anyone who tries to cover the all-powerful personality of Godhead, and in the Upanishads, Ishupanishad, it says that God is as powerful as fire. And one who tries to cover fire with their limited ability, and fire is very powerful, you know, they can literally come to ruin. So, verse number 20, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead was within her womb, Devaki illuminated the entire atmosphere in the place where she was confined. Seeing her jubilant, pure and smiling, comes the thought, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is now within her, will kill me. Devaki has never before looked so brilliant and jubilant. And as Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, that he could distinctly understand this, there was something wonderful within the womb of Devaki. In this way, Kamsa became perturbed because he was sure that the Supreme Personality of Godhead would kill him in the future. The Supreme Personality of Godhead who would kill him in the future had now come. So, of course, such a wonderful philosophy, and because we understand that this is, we're not talking about a myth or what have you, but we actually see within this world these things happening. Amongst the people who distribute knowledge in this world, the scientists, they're always trying to cover the truth of the bad effects of the results of their science, how for sense gratification will cause so much trouble. They always cover that. And, you know, within religion, the religious books are edited in an unscrupulous way to cover certain truths so that they can be utilized for material purposes. That's the very nature of this world. And because you can see that, you know, it's not talking about something fictitious or something that doesn't relate to us, even in the very beginning days of Krishna consciousness, when we read this, we understood how things would pan out. We understood that even though India doesn't accept the Bhagavad Gita, the Westerners don't accept the Bhagavad Gita, the Hindus don't, no one does, but Prabhupada does, and what is stated here just seems so logical, and you can see it playing out in the world. We understood, yes, Krishna is the absolute truth. The attempt to cover him will be futile, and those who try to do so will come to ruin. And over the course of time, that's actually what we've seen happen. It's not like, you know, Scientology, that somehow there's some, you know, people from another planet that you will never see, and they came here at a time that no one can, you know, verify, and that if you do these, you know, everything stated is unverifiable. Everything in the Bhagavad Gita is actually verifiable within this world, the nature of reality. So you can really put your faith in it. Although it's inconceivable, you can still see it factually playing out. So, let's see. Going on with this purport, text number 20. Human society has become so fallen that instead of understanding the living force within the body, and of course, for everyone, the absolute truth begins with the discussion of the difference between the body and the soul. That is the beginning of the discussion of the absolute truth. The existence of spirit. And the existence of spirit is first understood not as the inconceivable person, I've got it, but as the inconceivable spirit soul within everyone. So human society has become so fallen that instead of understanding the living force within the body, people have become busy with external things. This is a discrepancy in human duties. Therefore, Krishna has taken birth or taken shelter within the womb of the Krishna consciousness movement. Men of Kamsa's class, therefore, are very much afraid and are busy trying to stop this movement, especially in the Western countries. Prabhupada quotes this. One politician has remarked that the Krishna consciousness movement is spreading like an epidemic. And that if not checked immediately, within 10 years, it may capture government power. There is, of course, such potency in the Krishna consciousness movement. And then he quotes Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kali Kali Namarupe, Krishna avatar. In this age, Krishna has appeared in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The Krishna consciousness movement is spreading like wildfire all over the world. And here's coming back to this example of fire. God, you know, God is as powerful as fire. And it will go on doing so. Men who are like Kamsa are very much afraid of the movement's progress and acceptance by the younger generation. But as Krishna could not be killed by Kamsa, this movement cannot be checked by men of Kamsa's class. The movement will go on increasing more and more, provided the leaders of the movement remain firmly Krishna conscious by following the regular principles and the primary activities of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra regularly. And as we said before, that Krishna, within the heart of the living entity, empowers one to preach Krishna consciousness, empowers one to do one's duties in Krishna consciousness. And what's that? And but that presence of the Lord within the heart is dependent upon the mercy of the Guru. And as Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita in the fifth chapter, that Krishna's mercy, it's not partial to someone, but it all depends upon one's execution of one's duties in Krishna consciousness. In other words, one shouldn't think, oh, someone's getting the mercy of the Guru and someone else is not. Anyone who takes up the instructions of the spiritual master we'll get the mercy of the Guru, and we'll get and we'll feel Krishna's presence within their heart, and we'll be empowered to join in and relish the spreading of the Krishna consciousness movement victoriously all over the world. And therefore, again, the importance of diksha or initiation. Text 21. Comes the thought, what is my duty now? The Supreme Lord, who knows his purpose, Prabhupada quoting Bhagavad Gita 4.8, will not give up his prowess. Devaki is a woman. She is my sister. Moreover, she is now pregnant. If I kill her, my reputation, opulence and duration of life will certainly be vanquished. All right. So in other words, he's thinking, what am I going to do about this Hari, this Vishnu? And in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says that Kamsa began to think, what is to be done with Devaki? Surely she has Vishnu or Krishna within her womb. So it is certain that Krishna has come to execute the mission of the demigods. And even if I immediately kill Devaki, his mission cannot be frustrated. Kamsa knew very well that no one can frustrate the purpose of Vishnu. Any intelligent man can understand that the laws of God cannot be violated. His purpose will be served in spite of all impediments offered by the demons. So this is a very... we'll read this and we'll just make a comment after this. So going back to Prabhupada's purport to verse 21, that according to Vedic principles, a woman, a brahmana, an old man, a child and a cow should never be killed. It appears that Kamsa, although a great enemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was aware of the Vedic culture and conscious of the fact that the soul transmigrates from one body to another and that one suffers in the next life according to the karmas of this life. So Kamsa understood this. Therefore, he was afraid of killing Devaki, since she was a woman, she was his sister, and she was pregnant. A Kshatriya becomes famous by performing heroic acts. But what would be heroic about killing a woman who, while confined in his custody, was under his shelter? Therefore, he did not want to act drastically by killing Devaki. Kamsa's enemy was within Devaki's womb. But killing an enemy in such a nascent state would not be an exhibition of prowess. So it goes on to explain these different facts. So Kamsa very conscientiously deliberated upon these facts and therefore refrained from killing Devaki, although he was completely confident that his enemy had already appeared within her womb. Prabhupada in the Krishna book explains like this further: if I kill Devaki at the present, Vishnu will enforce his supreme will more vehemently. And no one desires to kill his reputation, even in an awkward situation. If I kill Devaki now, my reputation will be spoiled. If I kill her, immediately my reputation, the results of my pious activities and my duration of life will all be finished. So you can see here he's understanding how no one can defy the laws of God. And in verse 22, it says, a person who is very cruel is regarded as death even while living, for while he is living, or after his death, everyone condemns him. And after the death of a person in the bodily concept of life, he is undoubtedly transferred to the hell known as Andhatama. So he could understand these different facts. And Jiva Goswami speaks this for our understanding, that one who lives in the bodily concept, thinking I am this body, involves himself by the very nature of this conception in a life of sinful activities. Anyone living in such a conception is to be considered a candidate for hell. So that's and that's their mention in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.30. And one who is in the bodily concept of life has no control over sense gratification. Such a person can do anything sinful, to eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy a life of sense gratification, not knowing of the soul's transmigration from one body to another. Such a person does whatever he likes, whatever he imagines, and therefore, being subject to the laws of nature, he suffers miserably again and again in different material bodies. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.5. And from 5.5.4, in the bodily conception of life, a person is kamanubandha, or conditioned by karma, and as long as the mind is absorbed in karma, one must accept a material body. Further down, Srila Prabhupada says, therefore, Jiva Goswami says that tanumani, those in the bodily concept of life, are papi, sinful persons. In particular, a person who wants to maintain his body by killing animals is most sinful and cannot understand the value of life. Attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. And as Prabhupada summarizes in the Krishna book, that no one likes a cruel person. This comes to thinking to himself. No one likes the cruel person during his lifetime, and after his death, people curse him. On account of his self-identification with the body, he must be degraded and pushed into the darkest region of hell. All right, so this is Kamsa meditating on all the pros and cons of killing Devaki. So far, there's not many pros. Otherwise, he would have killed her. But you see how the discussion of the absolute truth begins with the discussion that we are not this body, but an eternal spirit soul. So, we're in the reception, as you can tell. Yes, so the discussion of the absolute truth, or up to Krishna consciousness, begins with the discussion that I'm not this body, I'm an eternal spirit soul. That is discussion on the absolute truth from the beginning. And that is the discussion on reality and the truth or the facts of life. One who cannot accept those basic tenets of the facts of life, the reality of life, or they don't want to hear it, is because they're inclined to sense gratification, and they will prefer to just go on in the bodily concept of life and not allowing that type of sense gratification to be hindered in any way. So they will do whatever they can to cover or prevent that knowledge from, becoming manifest or spreading. So not just the topics of Krishna, but even that beginning topic, one is a spirit soul, even that is, persons who are in the bodily concept of life addicted to sense gratification, that is not very appealing to them as well. And they will try, and the fact that someone is not inclined to those topics means that they're sinful. So, and therefore, the Bhagavad Gita begins with that, helping people to understand that they're not this body. And even if people can't understand much more than that, even that topic will vastly reduce their sinful activity. Many people, even just with that topic, understanding the nature of the body and the soul and karma, karmic reactions, will refrain from killing other living entities. And of course, as we know, the pandemic of this coronavirus, its very source comes from those who will eat anything without any restriction and without any, they will go out of their way to make sure that these discussions never impede their ability to eat as they please, to kill indiscriminately, as they please, according to their own imagination. It is that very activity which is the source of the pandemic, which is now spreading throughout the whole world. And of course, it's not isolated to one particular country, but, some are worse than others. But throughout the whole world, it has become very fashionable, literally eat anything, because there's good money in it. People find things that, if there's an abundant source of a particular living entity, that means there's an abundant wealth available. Let's kill it and distribute it as food. and such persons are not interested. Yep.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
I noticed that there's a lot of references just on things that come up, the internet, that people don't want to be told that it's because they eat meat.
Yeah, they don't want to be. that's right.
They're actually saying that.
That's exactly right.
Saying this so you can sort of see how covered over it is.
Yes. So this is a very interesting thing. Therefore, when we preach Krishna consciousness, we know from the very beginning what they don't want to hear. And that's the art of preaching. We shouldn't think, oh, I know so much from the Bhagavad Gita, people are going to love to hear all the things I know. It's not like that. We know that generally people are not going to want to hear that. So we have to tread very carefully, because Krishna, because God empowers the devotees who are trying to serve, the spiritual acharyas and Srila Prabhupada, he empowers them to actually speak in such a way to understand the absolute truth and to, give that knowledge to others. He empowers them to do that. And Srila Prabhupada's books, that is the principal empowerment, went through Srila Prabhupada. One time Prabhupada said, people are preaching. He said, give them a book. what were your 15 minutes of preaching do? Give them a book. So in other words, when we preach, we try to present something from Srila Prabhupada's books. We may word it as if they don't know it's come. We're not quoting Shastra. They don't think we're quoting Shastra, but we're trying to present in words that they will accept something from Prabhupada's books, because the words in Prabhupada's books have the potency of Krishna to actually counteract their disgust of spiritual topics and their love of sense gratification. The words of Prabhupada's books are specifically empowered. And therefore, understanding Prabhupada's books and trying in our own words, according to the audience, to give that knowledge from Prabhupada's books is very potent. Otherwise, it's an impossible task. But here also, we do see that in the nature, now Kamsa, you know, he's a determined demon, but we know that, and one time Prabhupada said, currently, you know, most of the leaders of this world are all Rakshasas. You know, so they're of Kamsa's elk. But most of the leaders of this world, you know, at some stage, you know, there's so much knowledge available. You know, they will have heard something from Buddhism, they will have heard something from the devotees, they will have heard something from Krishna, because they have to deal with people from all over the world. They have to be receptive and they have to be courteous to other people. That's because we're in it. So, but therefore there's some knowledge there, although they're not particularly interested in it. But when such activities as this happen, we see that there's for a moment there's an opportunity for the message to sink in, even for Kamsa, even for someone like Kamsa. Not only was he going to eat for sense gratification, he was prepared to kill his sister. Even such a person, there comes a point where the Lord's, you know, the laws of the material nature and the presence of the Lord, even for the atheist, you know, they feel that power, just like in the world now, and it makes them stop just for a moment. At that time, because, you know, as soon as the pandemic finishes, they'll all be back to normal. At the moment, some people, even in different parts of the world, they're saying, well, better not eat this anymore and what have you. They're being very careful. When the pandemic finishes, it's all back to normal. But if we can take the opportunity at certain times, which Vasudev does, and this is what Vasudev does, we see that, you know, at each stage he sees a little opportunity, a little opening, so he'll preach, you know, to Kamsa, and gradually, until Krishna's, you know, the full manifestation of Krishna then completely removes Kamsa, and of course eventually the full manifestation of the Sankirtan movement will just literally flood the world. In the meantime, we have to take opportunities to preach. So let's go back to this. So Sukadeva Goswami said, deliberating in this way, Kamsa, although determined to continue enmity toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, refrained from the vicious killing of his sister. He decided to wait until the Lord was born and then do what was needed. As Prabhupada puts it in the Krishna book again, Kamsa finally decided not to kill Devaki right away, but to wait for the inevitable future. So he sees certain things are inevitable. In the Garga Samhita, it's put this way. Kamsa said, or he's thinking, as soon as he is born, I will kill him. Verse 24, while sitting on his throne or in his sitting room, while lying on his bed, or indeed while situated anywhere, and while eating, sleeping and walking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord Hrishikesh. In other words, by thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. So, and then one time Prabhupada said that, you know, previously we said that, you know, Krishna is all attractive. And amongst enemies, he's also all attractive. Because he completely, you know, fulfills all the requirements. If someone makes him their enemy, then it's all consuming. Yeah. It doesn't leave room for anything else. He's the best enemy. Uh, Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Tagore points out this, that Kamsa was continuously thinking of Hari so that he saw Hari wherever he looked. So he knew that Krishna was his enemy from his previous life, Hari. Such a vision gives bliss in prema, but in fear it yields extreme distress. This is the difference between a devotee and an enemy seeing the Lord. And Prabhupada summarized like this in his Krishna book. Thus being merged in the ocean of animosity amongst the personality of Godhead, he began to think of Krishna or Vishnu while sitting, while sleeping, while walking, while eating, while working. In all the situations of his life, his mind became so much absorbed with the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that indirectly he could see only Krishna or Vishnu around him. Unfortunately, his mind was so absorbed in the thought of Vishnu, he is not recognized as a devotee because he was thinking of Krishna as an enemy. To think of Krishna favorably is Krishna consciousness, but to think of Krishna unfavorably is not Krishna conscious. And that is a very interesting point. We'll discuss this a little bit. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that Srila Rupa Goswami has described the finest pattern of devotional service as Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam. So that's quoted, it's in the Nectar Devotion and it's quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, chapter 19, verse 167. And the translation is that cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably. Kamsa, of course, was also Krishna conscious, but because he regarded Krishna as his enemy, even though he was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his Krishna consciousness was not favorable for his existence. Krishna consciousness favorably cultivated makes one completely happy. Later on, Srila Prabhupada says in that same purport that Kamsa, however, because of cultivating Krishna consciousness in a different way, that is, inimically, was uncomfortable in all the affairs of his life, whether sitting, sleeping, walking, or eating. He was always in danger. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A non-devotee or atheist also cultivates God consciousness by trying to avoid God in everything. So, Prabhupada goes on to say, although Kamsa was always absorbed in thoughts of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not happy. So actually, my father, who is probably one of the greatest atheists I ever met, but although for a while he, I don't know whether he was just trying to bribe me for some favours by being a little favourable towards Krishna consciousness, or perhaps there was a little glimmer of light in his life, but mostly he was very atheistic. But the only way I could get him to talk about Krishna consciousness, whereas I would debate, you know, the existence of God, and he would have all these arguments against it. Anyway, although Kamsa was always absorbed in thoughts of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not happy. A devotee, however, whether sitting on a throne or beneath a tree, is always happy. Srila Rupa Goswami resigned from office as a government minister to sit beneath a tree, yet he was happy. And further on, he says, for a non-devotee, the world is full of problems, whereas for a devotee, the entire world is full of happiness. This comfortable position of a devotee can be established by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 6:22. Even when a devotee is superficially put into great difficulty, he is never disturbed. So, of course, you know, there is a quite a discussion on that topic of fate, that verse that was quoted from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's there in the Nectar Devotion, and the Nectar Devotion, we see that even in the introduction of the Nectar Devotion, there's a lot of comment by Srila Prabhupada on how, you know, this Krishna consciousness or bhakti leads one to happiness, but it cannot be found by the materialist or the impersonalist. So Prabhupada discusses that at length. If anyone wants to look at how he expands that verse and that topic at length in the Nectar Devotion introduction. And in a letter to Jamuna, Srila Prabhupada once said, Krishna consciousness means full cooperation with Krishna. And Krishna means with all his entourage. We should always remember this. Just like when we speak of a tree, it includes the root, the trunk, the branches, the leaves, the flowers, everything. Therefore, to love Krishna means to love him along with his name, his fame, his qualities, his entourage, his abode, his devotees, etc. And that's a point that I want to discuss, that sometimes devotees become inimical to other devotees. And you know, other devotees is part of Krishna. That's part of Krishna's entourage. And that's unfavorable. And it causes, and what happens is that although one may be discussing Krishna and preaching of Krishna and so many different aspects of Krishna consciousness, which are a contention because of devotees' different opinions or different, you know, handling of Krishna consciousness or what have you, one has to be very careful in that, because it's actually unfavorable Krishna consciousness. And it leads to distress and anxiety and calamity. Now, that we discussed that previously, that, you know, Lord Brahma committed a mistake and the Satgarbhas brought it up with him. They sort of mocked it, and it was somewhat disrespectful, and they were cursed. And we had that discussion that, yes, there are different schools of thought in Krishna consciousness, and those discussions go on between those who are appropriate for that discussion, amongst peers, or guided by senior devotees, but those who are dealing with persons, even peers or senior devotees, or even people they feel are junior to them, as soon as they drop the etiquettes of Krishna consciousness, then it's unfavorable Krishna consciousness. And it's therefore, you know, it's not actually Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is more cooperative with Krishna and his devotees. So it doesn't mean that one can't debate different aspects of Krishna consciousness, just like in ISKCON, they're debating, you know, when we shall see women, you know, as gurus, and, you know, different things. Shall we put money into a gurukul? Shall we put it into, you know, a building? Whatever. You know, these things go on. But as soon as we drop the etiquette and deal unfavorably, in a way that Krishna never recommends, you know, that causes offense, then immediately that is unfavorable Krishna consciousness, even though it's all about Krishna consciousness and even though it's all about ISKCON. So it's very dangerous. Any comments on that or questions? So one may...
What about the Satgarbhas?
The Satgarbhas when Brahma had some fall down, and you know, he had some lusty thoughts, those Satgarbhas, six personalities, sons of Marici, sort of mocked him.
Oh, yeah.
As a way of, you know, they didn't think it was right, which it wasn't, but it was the way that they did it, and perhaps they were dealing with a very senior person, and it could have been handled a lot better, or brought the matter brought up with their father Marici, who could have discussed it with Brahma, etc. So, but the main point I want to bring up here, it's not just unfavorably, you know, being a little bit inimical to Krishna. It's if one is inimical to ISKCON, that is also inimical to Krishna. So, but as I've mentioned many times before, you know, that quote by Srila Prabhupada, that the movement is based upon four principles. Humility, represented by Sanatana Goswami. Tolerance, represented by Haridas Thakur. Renunciation, represented by Ramananda Raya, sometimes said Raghunath Das Goswami. And criticism, constructive criticism, cooperative criticism, represented by Jagadananda Pandit, and sometimes said Sri Damodar. So it is one of the pillars of our movement to, you know, always being able to debate what is best for the spreading of Krishna consciousness. And as Prabhupada says, there will always be, you know, different schools of thought. So that's not unusual. And
what was the third one, Prabhuji?
The third one?
Yeah. First was humility.
Humility, tolerance, renunciation. Renunciation.
And who represents that?
Ramananda Roya.
Okay.
Also Raghunath Das Goswami, but and then criticism, constructive criticism, analysis. The Prabhupada sometimes use the word. Represented by Damodar Pandit, sometimes it's also said Sri Damodar.
Okay.
Jagadananda Pandit, he also criticized Lord Chaitanya. And no one dared to criticize Lord Chaitanya, but out of love, see that's the difference. Out of love, Jagadananda Pandit criticized because he didn't want people speaking badly of Lord Chaitanya, so he picked him up on some items. See, so it was out of love. And the same, one may criticize ISKCON out of love for ISKCON. We don't want people thinking badly of ISKCON, so you know, please let this not, you know, happen in our movement. Like that, and so anyway, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent him eventually to Navadvip because Lord Chaitanya's mother was there along with other devotees, and no one could dare criticize them. Who would dare criticize, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother or some of those associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? But he wanted someone because they needed to be able to, although the sentiment was there, they also needed to conform a little to Shastra for the sake of the setting example for others who are not necessarily intimate associates. So he sent Jagadananda Pandit, you go there because everyone knows you'd even criticize me, therefore if you say something, no one's going to, you know, contradict you. So criticism.
Which you said... if somebody is inimical in a bad way, then, you know, that's directly linked to being inimical to Krishna.
It is.
So
yeah,
you said before any points about that, that, well, I guess previously, you know, if one's... on the bodily concept or accepting or absorbed in that, they're forgetting that inconceivable nature of Krishna and not accepting that they have to be careful.
Exactly, yes. That, you know, one thing, it's a good point that...
maybe they're being a bit fussy.
Yes, it's one thing that always astounds me in persons who are reputed for their nice situation in Krishna consciousness, and yet to push some agenda that there may be some disagreement they know that others may not want, so they'll just literally trample someone to get their way and transgress etiquette and cause Vaishnava aparad. And the thing that gets to me is that, you know, Krishna doesn't like that. And you know that Krishna will override any of our material attempts. But there's almost like, you know, this complete, you know, when it comes to, obviously there's coming back to a bodily concept of life that by my prowess I will get this done or, you know, push this through. And one, it's unfavourable. Krishna consciousness. And two, it's a lack of Krishna consciousness. Because anyone, you know, who, you know, whenever we, the five factors of action, and one of them is the Lord within our heart, that whatever we do, if it's sanctioned by the Lord, it will be successful. And if it's not sanctioned by the Lord, it will not be successful. That's the basic teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, to do something, and while doing it, do something to offend the Lord that we know is wrong, we know that it's not going to be successful. And so and therefore Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction that as soon, even if one is a, you know, first-class devotee, as soon as they become envious of another devotee, they immediately become fallen. So you can actually have very elevated devotees, but when they become envious of another devotee, like, you know, envious, like Kamsa is envious, and demons are envious, and materialists are envious, so it's not a devotional quality, they become fallen. So fallen means they're not on the platform of Krishna consciousness. They're on the material platform, like that.
Getting that these are one Krishna.
Yes. So I'll read another letter here. This is a letter to Paddy Dorgan in Delhi in 1971. As far as your questions, Krishna is not in need of anything. He is Purnam, the complete whole, and yet he appreciates our love for him. Just like everyone appreciates if someone exhibits love for them. So he kindly allows us to show that love by considering that if I do not feed him, Krishna will go hungry. If I do not give him rest, he will be tired, like that. He reciprocates by pretending to be dependent on me, my slave, just to give us opportunity to find the real object of our loving propensity and to take pleasure by pleasing and serving him. Everything we do should be for the reason that it gives pleasure to Krishna. And this is very important, you know, in our services. Not, oh, I've got to get this job done. No, that's not what you're doing. I'm doing something to please Krishna. You know, that's we can never forget that. Because Krishna's intimate associates give him the most pleasure, and because they are his favourites, it pleases him to see that these associates and close friends are also offered all respects by devotees. As we were talking about, you can't, you know, offend Krishna's devotees. Tulasi Devi is part of Krishna's entourage. She is Krishna-ized or Krishna-conscious, and it is this pure state she has all the qualities of Krishna, and therefore she becomes worshipful just like Krishna. So again, that point of Krishna being in the heart, then the Dharma is there, that Krishna is fully present. There is a saying, love me, love my dog. It is like that. To approach the president is very difficult unless you are the friend of his son or daughter. Then it becomes very easy. So worship of Tulasi and other of the Lord Krishna's entourage is part of the total devotional attitude of pleasing Krishna. Nice letter. So that unfavorable to Krishna doesn't mean people who just don't like God. It even means within Krishna consciousness movement, how we handle, you know, devotees and our dealings with ISKCON itself, which is non-different from the Lord. Okay?
Was that in the letter?
Yeah, that was in a letter to Patty Dorgan in Delhi, 17th of November 1971. And the first one I read was a letter to Jamuna in LA, 2nd of March 1970. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm going to skip about 10 pages because I've got about 10 pages here on that one topic of what is favorable, and many, many more letters and excerpts from Prabhupada's, because it's a wonderful topic. But I'm just going to keep moving on. Maybe more than 10 pages. It's about 20 pages there. And in many other letters and excerpts from Prabhupada's lectures and his, even the Bhagavatam and what have you, he quotes, you know, Kamsa's unfavorable Krishna consciousness in many, many different ways. So it's a big topic, quite a nice topic. In fact, you know, that there is also, that's a, what do you call it, a thesis. Mm. You know, there's so much information on that one topic. That's a thesis in itself. Maybe what's that?
I think when we discussed, I think it was Canto 7, the first or the second chapter.
Yeah.
In which we, this is this, I think the whole chapter is about this being unfavorably disposed towards Krishna and how that is not Krishna consciousness. So I think we discussed in detail at that time as well.
Oh, right. Okay. So I went over some of those a bit more, did I?
Krishna is
neutral.
Right, Krishna
is neutral. Good, good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah,
I'm glad to see you were listening. Very good. All right, now, okay. Now, I'll get my, got some more notes here. All right, now which verse of the Bhagavatam did you just get up to then?
24.
Okay. So. More ammunition. More like 30 pages. Yeah, and I think to some degree we might have discussed some of this also in when we did Nectar Devotion. Yeah. All right, so we're now up to verse 25 of this second chapter. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada, Devala and Vyas, and by other demigods like Indra, Chandra and Varuna, invisibly approached the room of Devaki, where they all joined in offering their respectful obeisances and prayers to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can bestow blessings upon everyone. And Prabhupada mentions, he says it in this way in his Krishna book, that they began to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in selected verses which are very pleasing to the devotees and which award fulfillment of their desires. So this next section, very wonderful explanation of how Krishna, the person, is the absolute truth. That's what we're discussing here. It gets a little philosophical, but basically they're discussing this. This, Devaki is pregnant, like many women in the world. Within a womb, there's a baby. And it would be very, very difficult to think that God would, you know, take birth and grow like a baby or what have you, you know, to appear within the womb and be born. That whole concept means that generally people would dismiss that this cannot be God, this cannot be the absolute truth. And so their prayers to Devaki, you know, they're very pleasing to Devaki. But they also, they're very pleasing to the Lord, and therefore they have inconceivable powers to fulfill the desires of the devotees. Now, in the purport to text 25, Kamsa, being an Asura, was always planning how to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his mother Devaki. Thus, he was also Krishna conscious, but devotees are Krishna conscious favorably. And later he says in that same purport that Narada and the demigods were accompanied by other saintly persons like Sanak and Sanatan, all of whom came to congratulate or welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though Kamsa was planning to kill Devaki, he too awaited the arrival of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Narada and other saintly persons, they were also very happily waiting for Krishna to arrive, and they were there to welcome him. So that's the mood of their prayers. Text 26. O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favour, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth, in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antayami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. So in very simple words, as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the Course says, you, Sri Krishna, are the only truth in this world. You are understood by devotees and not by others. That's the essence of it. In Srila Prabhupada's purports, he says, the demigods and devotees know perfectly well that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the true substance, whether within this material world or in the spiritual world. The Supreme Truth can be approached or understood by the Supreme Method as declared by the Supreme Truth in Bhagavad Gita 1855. Bhakti, devotional service, is the only way to understand the absolute truth. And so as we were describing before, those who understand that the nature of the first understanding of the absolute truth is that we are an eternal spirit soul, that is the actual substance of ourself, and that we are eternally related to the Supreme Soul, who is the substance of everything, including ourself. And therefore, all our activities of the spirit soul senses should be in harmony with the Supreme Soul. That is the truth of our existence. And if we say that no, all of my activities should be for not for Krishna, but for the objects of the senses, for sense gratification related to this body, then that is not the truth. And as long as one remains on that bodily platform, therefore one can never understand the absolute truth. And the process of bhakti is regulating the process of sense gratification and engaging all our senses instead for the pleasure of the Supreme Absolute Truth. That is the process of bhakti, which not only purifies the conditioned soul, but brings one to the ultimate goal, situates oneself on the eternal transcendental platform as well. Now, also stated here that because the Lord is the Absolute Truth, in the purport it says, for the protection, therefore, the demigods surrender to the Supreme Truth, not to the relative truth. And we see here also that because Krishna is the Absolute Truth, his knowledge is the Absolute Truth, and therefore the knowledge, the instructions, the guidance and direction that we get from the Absolute Truth, as we get in the Bhagavad Gita and such and Srimad Bhagavatam, that is true in all phases, in the past, presently, in the future, at all times. So that is the nature of the Absolute Truth, is that it exists in all phases of past, present and future, and it is true in all phases, past, present and future, and therefore one should take shelter of that. And therefore, those who worship the do not take shelter of the Absolute Truth, but take shelter of material manifestations such as the demigods, they cannot be protected from illusion and the effects of the material world. So, Satcham Param Dhimahi, as quoted in Bhagavatam 111, indicate that one should search for the Absolute Truth, not the relative truth. Go to the light, not the darkness. And the demigods in this verse are also indicating, we take shelter of you because your vow will come true. Satcham Param, being the Absolute Truth. Now, in the Krishna book, you know, Prabhupada said this is this. Prabhupada says this: the first words they spoke acclaim that the Lord is true to his vow. That's how Prabhupada presents it. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna descends to the material world just to protect the pious and destroy the impious. That is his vow. The demigods could understand that the Lord has taken his residence within the womb of Devaki to fulfill his vow, and they were very glad that the Lord was appearing in order to fulfill his mission. Then the demigods addressed the Lord as Satcham Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. So, so it's very interesting how Prabhupada brings this back to the Bhagavad Gita. They're waiting for Krishna to appear because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he will descend to protect the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants and re-establish principles of religion. And he's also giving the process whereby people can go back to the spiritual world. Of course, Krishna hasn't been born yet. So Krishna hasn't been born, but Prabhupada's quoting. The Krishna is true to his vow because he's saying in Bhagavad Gita, which he hasn't spoken yet, that he's going to do this. I pondered upon this for some time, and of course we understand that Krishna also spoke Bhagavad Gita to the sun god, was that 120 million years ago or something? But also, what did Lord Vishnu say to Brahma? He also said that the Lord would appear and protect the devotees and, you know, same thing, you know, re-establish the principles of religion and, you know, remove the unwanted miscreants. So, you know, that same, you know, so this same personality, Krishna, who is not different from Vishnu, actually those demigods, you know, understood that that was the message of Krishna in his form of Vishnu at the time, you know, when they approached him with Bhumi as well. So now what he said then is also going to prove to be true. And then later on, Krishna reveals that, why have I come? I have come to do this, therefore Krishna is that same person as Vishnu. So, in the purport, in this material world, where there is a struggle for existence, men have invented many means for protection, but these are useless if the Supreme Personality of Godhead rejects them. Further on, he says, thus the Lord acts as Satya Brata. The protection given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to the protection given by the demigods. It is said that Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but when Lord Ramchandra went to kill him, Lord Shiva could not give him protection. See, so Lord Shiva can't be called Satya Brata, but Krishna can. These demigods, Brahma, Shiva, etc., they began to prayed for the Supreme Personality of Godhead in select prayers which are very pleasing to the devotees and which award fulfillment of all desires. So this is also in Prabhupada's purport. And the first words they spoke acclaimed that the Lord is true to his vow. And as quoted in the Bhagavad Gita. Thus, the demigods could understand that the Lord had taken his residence within the womb of Devaki to fulfill this vow. They were very glad that the Lord was appearing to fulfill his mission, and they addressed him as Satyam Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Prabhupada's statements in that part of the purport are very similar to exactly what it says in the Krishna book. And of course, this Krishna book was done in 1969 or something like that, whereas the 10th canto was done right at the end. But I do notice that in many cases, Prabhupada's purport in the 10th canto, you know, he's literally just taken his paragraph sometimes from the Krishna book. Yeah. Or it's become part, you know, word for word like that. And further on in that purport, to 26, says everyone is searching after the truth. That is a philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. Relative truth is not truth in all three phases of eternal time. Krishna is truth always, past, present and future. So, Satya Brata. And he's also Satyam Param, or the absolute truth. He's true to his vow, Satya Brata, and he's Satyam Param, the absolute truth. Prabhupada says, if there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the Supreme Truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence, etc., in this material world, the cause of the opulence is Krishna, etc. He goes on, you know, strength, reputation, beauty, everything, education. If there's anything like that in the material world, the cause is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. So this is a very important point, because a lot of the discussion in this philosophical, you know, verses of the demigods is a discussion on the relative truths that emanate from Krishna, to show that anything we see, we may say it's relative, but the point is that even if there's a relative truth, it has come from Krishna. And because Krishna is therefore the source of everything, even all the relative truths there, he's the absolute truth. So we will expand upon the relative truths in a moment. Now, in the Vishwanath Chakravarti, the cause purport, he says that the three Shaktis of Krishna, Jnana, Bala, Kriya, take shelter of you. Therefore, you are called Trisacham. And he quotes the Svetasvatara Upanishad. Now, Prabhupada expands upon this in his purport, that in every field, if there is not full knowledge, full strength and full activity, an endeavour is never successful. So knowledge is jnana, shakti, strength is bala shakti, and full activity, an endeavour, or kriya shakti, then there cannot be success. One must be backed by these three principles. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to do anything personally, for he has such potencies that anything he wants done will be perfectly well done perfectly well through the control of material nature. Similarly, those who are engaged in the service of the Lord are not meant to struggle for existence. The devotees who are fully engaged in the service of the Lord are not meant... The devotees who are fully engaged in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, more than 10,000 men and women all over the world, have no steady or permanent occupation, yet we actually see that they are maintained very opulently. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita 9.22, "For those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I carry to them what they lack and preserve what they have." The devotees have no anxiety over what will happen next, for they will stay. What will happen next? Where they will stay or what they will eat? For everything is maintained and supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has promised, "O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes." So here, the demigods, they're taking shelter of the Krishna, who is the absolute truth. And of course, that the absolute truth is all the shaktis, jnana, bala, kriya, by which everything is done, take shelter of Krishna. What's that? So here, the devotees, even in a world crisis, have a whole different perspective. They understand if somehow or another they just remain fixed in their activities of becoming a qualified devotee so that they can make some contribution, you know, in the long term to spreading Krishna consciousness and being Krishna conscious themselves, then by the grace of the Lord and his Jnana Balakriya Shaktis, that they will be, they do not have to worry, they do not have to be in anxiety like other people. Did that just turn off? Did that just turn off? That's right. It must be, oh, it's just the screen.
Yes. Yeah.
Everyone there?
Yes.
Good, yeah. Excellent. Yeah. The screen just went black, but you're still there, good. So, you imagine the situation of the entire universe. We have a problem on a little planet in the universe, and we're considering what will happen. The problem at this stage where Krishna appeared was a problem even for Lord Brahma, Shiva, and all the demigods individually and combined. It was causing everyone difficulty, and only the personality of Godhead could. So that they were even they went to the Lord for a remedy. So it was a monumental problem that affected, you know, Kamsa's activity on earth actually affect everything, because all activities in relationship to the Lord and the demigods stop. The whole order of the universe can be upset by such powerful demons unless the personality of Godhead, what to speak of, you know, controlling one little bug. So not only are all the Shaktis present within the Lord, but all the Lord's Amsas are also Satya. They're also taking shelter of the Lord. As Prabhupada says, all incarnations are the absolute truth, yet the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the origin of all incarnations. Now read verse 27. Now as I'm reading through this, remember that Prabhupada has helped us to understand the transition from one verse to the next. We're talking about the absolute truth, and that means that all relative truths also emanate from the Lord. They come from him, they're maintained by him, and they were drawn back into him. That is the nature of the absolute truth. There is nothing beyond the absolute truth. There's not something different. There's nothing to compare with the Lord. It is all coming from him. And this verse is actually expanding, it is a description of the entire, you know, material universe, which is repeated many times over, many universes, and it shows basically, you know, if we look at a tree and we think, how did that tree, where did that come from? You know, this huge banyan tree which takes up 5 miles or 5 kilometers in Calcutta, you know, there's one tree. That's inconceivable. But, you know, when we look at it, that, you know, within the ground and the seed, you know, nourished, and then the roots grow and then it grows and then, you know, the leaves come, and gradually we can see how little things can expand from a smaller thing. They're resting on the earth like that. So this is describing how something as wonderful as the whole material manifestation basically, you know, has in the same way just sprouted like a tree. So as big as it is and as wonderful it is, it does have the basis, you know, a few ingredients at the beginning by which everything expands. And so this is this verse describing that. Verse 27, the body, the total body and the individual body are of the same composition, and it may figuratively be called the original tree. From this tree, which fully depends on the ground of material nature, come two kinds of fruits. And now, I want to, you know, here is being compared to the body. I'll read from Krishna book chapter 2. Prabhupada says the demigods continue to offer their respectful prayers under the supreme form of the personality of Godhead Krishna by analytical study of the material manifestation. What is the material manifestation? It is just like a tree. So in the same way we look at the universal body, we can also look at the individual bodies. So it's, we can take it in both ways. So the body, the total body and the individual body are of the same composition and may figuratively be called the original tree. From this tree, which fully depends on the ground of material nature, comes two kinds of fruit, the enjoyment of happiness and the suffering of distress. The cause of the tree, forming its three roots, is association with the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion and ignorance. The fruits of bodily happiness have four tastes: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, which are experienced through five senses for acquiring knowledge in the midst of six circumstances: lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. The seven layers of bark covering the tree are skin, blood, muscle, fat, bone, marrow and semen. And the eight branches of the tree are the five gross and the three subtle elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. The tree of the body has nine hollows: the eyes, the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, the rectum and the genitals, and 10 leaves, the 10 ears passing through the body. In this tree of the body there are two birds: one is the individual soul and the other is the super soul. Now, the intention of this verse also is when we compare the relative truth to Krishna, the absolute truth, we see that the relative truth is subject to destruction, whereas the absolute truth is not. So that is another reason for describing the relative truth. And in summary, very quickly, Srila Prabhupada mentions that and he mentions this also in the Krishna book, that a tree is called briksha. Briksha means that thing which is, will ultimately be cut off. Therefore, this tree of the material manifestation cannot be accepted as the ultimate truth because it is influenced by time. But Krishna's body is eternal. He existed before the material manifestation. He is existing while the material manifestation is continuing, and when it will be dissolved, it will continue to exist. Therefore, only Krishna can be accepted as the absolute truth. Yeah? Now, in verse 28, the efficient cause of this material world, manifested with its many varieties as the original tree, is you. So here also we're talking about the big tree, the material manifestation, and the individual tree, the body. Here, the efficient cause of this material world, manifested with its many varieties as the original tree, is you, O Lord. You are also the maintainer of this material world, and after annihilation, you are the one in whom everything is conserved. Those who are covered by your external energy cannot see you behind this manifestation, but theirs is not the vision of learned devotees. So basically, the statement is this whole material manifestation, or this tree of material manifestation, emanates from Krishna. He is real, past, present, and future. So therefore, he's the absolute truth. So, and ultimately, as we see, that just as a tree rests upon the ground and returns to the ground, Similarly, the whole material manifestation rests upon the material energy, and that energy is the Lord's energy, which, you know, winds up back in the Lord. And so it also, we're also, as Prabhupada points out, that actually the supreme cause is one. So another understanding of the absolute truth, it is the one reality. Less intelligent persons, being deluded by the three modes of material nature, see that the material world is manifested through different causes. Those who are intelligent can see that the cause is one, Krishna. So different, the absolute truth has different aspects, and they're all satisfied by Krishna. When we compare a relative truth to the absolute truth, and of course, we can expand that into a discussion of the demigods, but we won't go into that here. And verse 29, O Lord, you are always in full knowledge, and to bring all good fortune to all living entities, you appear in different incarnations, all of them transcendental to the material creation. When you appear in these incarnations, you are pleasing to the pious and religious devotees, but for the non-devotees, you are the annihilator. So, although we've presented all the demigods who are part of the material manifestation as not the absolute truth, they depend upon the absolute truth, the Lord does have many different expansions, which are Satchitananda, that they are non-different from the Lord. They are the one supreme Lord, and yet he appears in many different expansions. That is another manifestation of the absolute truth. So the one personality of Godhead, he descends to protect the devotees and annihilate the miscreants in many different expansions as according to the what is required, and yet he is one person with many expansions. And so that is also, so the nature of the absolute truth is not impersonal or formless or limited. And Srila Prabhupada, in his Krishna book, he says, people in general are unable to understand your actual form, therefore you are personally descending to exhibit your original eternal form. Somehow people can understand the different incarnations of your Lordship, but they are puzzled to understand the eternal form of Krishna with two hands, moving among human beings exactly like one of them. This eternal form of your Lordship gives ever-increasing transcendental pleasure to the devotees, but for the non-devotees, this form is very dangerous. Now, again, we see here that mentioning that the Lord has many expansions means that people struggle to understand Krishna. They may understand, Lord Ram, that avatar is God, but they don't understand Krishna. But when they realize that Krishna is the absolute truth and all the avatars such as Ram, such as Macha, they are all emanating from Krishna, then they understand, oh yes, then Krishna is the absolute truth. Text 30, O lotus eyed Lord, by concentrating one's meditation on your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, and by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross the ocean of nescience, one follows in the footsteps of Mahajans, great saints, sages and devotees. By the simple process, one can cross the ocean of nescience as easily as one steps over the hoof print of a calf. So this verse is now describing the form of the Lord who gives protection. And Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, the purpose of meditation is to focus the mind upon the personality of Godhead, beginning from his lotus feet. Simply by meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord, the great sages cross over the vast ocean of material existence without difficulty. So, so the difficulty is, of course, that persons, as described here, before I get into that, but I'll read text 31. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee, and therefore you know you are known as a desire tree, Vancha Kalpa Taru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. Now, there's a statement here, Prabhupada mentions in his purport, the duty of the guru is to find the means according to the time, circumstances, and the candidate by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from a candidate who wants to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. Now, sometimes this sort of statement, which comes up in other places of the Bhagavatam, you hear devotees say it as if, we must find different ways to, you know, spread Krishna consciousness. And as soon as they say that, I think, but I thought it was the gurus and the acharyas' duty to do that, you know. So in other words, sometimes I hear devotees say it as if, well, the gurus and acharyas have previously said this, but we're finding new means. And that's not the purport of it, you know. It's not the the import of this, as it's described here, that Prabhupada says in his purport, first of all, this statement reveals how the merciful acharyas and the merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead together help the serious devotee who wants to return home back to Godhead. So we may try to be serious devotees, and we take the process that the gurus and the acharyas, along with the personality of Godhead, have chalked out. So Lord Chaitanya's chalked out a process, and we can't be in the mood that, oh, we're going to come up with new ways. No, you can't supersede Lord Chaitanya, and you can't supersede the acharyas who are following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. Nor can we supersede the process of the Brajavasis, how they develop, you know, following the footsteps. So one has to be very, very careful of taking this particular statement in a very proud way, and where sometimes they then diminish something that the guru or Prabhupada has presented, as if now we're going to, you know, it's saying here, we've got to find ways, so let's do this. But we can never do it by jumping over, superseding, or neglecting the actual acharyas and gurus. As soon as we do that, we're not actually following what it says here. That's a different thing.
Which statement triggered this discussion?
What's that? Which statement? The statement is that it says, you know, in the text, it says, when acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. The acharyas have the boat. They leave that same boat for us. We don't have to create a new boat. They have a boat. This is how you cross. They leave that boat for us. We're not, you know, in the business, that boat's no longer suitable, make a new one. There's a statement somewhere in the first or second canto, very, you know, in the purport, it might be, you know, very similar. But, you know, on occasion when I've heard devotees give class on that, it's almost like they're taking from that, that they have the purport, this statement, finding, you know, what is it, Prabhupada says, the duty of the guru is to find the means according to the time, circumstances and the candidate by which one can be induced to render devotional service. Right? It's that. Okay. The different circumstances, you know, different people, you know, different times. So, you know, let's find the ways and means. The misapplication is where there are principles laid down by the Acharyas, specifically Srila Prabhupada, who has encompassed all the teachings of the Acharyas from Lord Chaitanya in his books. There are principles there which shall never be overridden. And if someone overrides those principles by quoting this sort of a statement that, no, it says that we have to find the means, you know, according to the circumstances and the candidate, you know, if we use that statement to diminish the statements of Prabhupada for how Krishna consciousness is spread or how one becomes Krishna conscious, that is a misapplication of that statement. If we, you know, Prabhupada has presented within the Krishna consciousness movement, there is unlimited room for the individuality of the devotees presenting Krishna consciousness. There are many, many different ways that we can, you know, modify things unlimitedly according to time, place and circumstance. But there is no room to do that by rejecting Prabhupada's teachings. That's the point. And what I see is that sometimes they'll give class on this almost as if to, and you know, with the tone that, you know, previously, you know, so for instance, say let's take book distribution. You know, there were some who thought this book distribution, you know, it's just not working, people are becoming disturbed. We're not going to develop our movement by distributing Prabhupada's books. We have to come up with other ways and, you know, maybe we should be a little bit more Christian and a little bit more Hindu, you know, and whatever, like that, you know. Maybe we should grow a hair and just wear, you know, a hippie clothes again and preach like that. So, in other words, they're taking this, but they're literally rejecting what Prabhupada has given us. So, yes, we should be always finding the means, you know, even new means in one sense, to present the same teachings of Prabhupada, the same process of Prabhupada. But as soon as we take that statement that was something, you know, what Prabhupada's way of doing things, okay, that's outdated. It's a whole new world now. You know, people are not like they were in the 60s, whatever, when Prabhupada arrived. Let's do something else, you know. That's a whole different thing. So that's the danger. You know, when things that Prabhupada taught as, you know, our movement, books are the basis, purity is the force, preaching is the essence. If someone's saying, look, let's just not preach so much, it's disturbing people. Oh, well, that preaching is the essence. That's permanent. It goes for as long as there are devotees on this planet. Preaching is the essence. You can't change that. Now let's cut back the preachers and not preach. You know, let's just do our own thing. Let's get the Goswami's books. And perhaps if we develop love of God and people see how much we love God, maybe they'll, you know, something like that. You know, books are the basis. Purity is a force. You know, preaching is the essence, utility is a principle. So utility is a principle means that Prabhupada is saying the same thing. You can utilize everything to somehow preach Krishna consciousness. It's unlimited. But you can't override the other factors. So that's the point I'm making there. Anyway, as I do, so good. Can I call you back? Yeah, can I call you back?
Oh, there is some Vishal waiting for you outside.
Oh, okay. Tell him I'll be with him in a minute. Thanks. Yes, so, alright, let's just get through this purport and then we'll finish up for the day. Okay, so at this point, what we've come to is where the demigods have, you know, stated that Krishna is the absolute truth and therefore always true to his vow. He's come here as he said he would to protect the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants, re-establish the principles of religion, and that this form of Krishna, who is very difficult to understand, should be taken as the absolute truth because he's the source of all the other incarnations which people may understand. He's the source of all shaktis, which make everything successful. And therefore, the process is to meditate upon Krishna. And now, and we begin that meditation with the lotus feet. And so the next part of our discussion when we come back next week is, establishing the Lord's name, form, fame and pastimes as non-different from the absolute truth, and the mistake that people make in considering Krishna's, name, form, etc. to be simply a manifestation of the material mode of goodness, and therefore, ultimately, because of that mistake, even if they try to get liberation, ultimately, even if they do get liberation, they will fall down because they haven't taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore, and then it goes into, a bit of a discussion about how therefore devotees always feel safe, even just by chanting the holy name, because the name form, being absolute truth, Krishna's name, form, fame and pastimes are all non-different from him. So that's how the discussion, so that goes into the transcendental nature of the personality of Godhead, Krishna specifically. So we'll just finish that part of this chapter next week. Hare Krishna. Okay, at home? Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
So we begin from text 32 next week.
Just one question for me.
Yeah, sure.
So are there any key memory verses in these first two chapters?
Yeah, I'm scouring the Bhagavatam now for a list of, I don't want to get too many, but I'll let you know. That's what I'm in the process of doing now. I'm doing, from the seventh canto right through to the 12th. Basically, with all our slokas from the Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhava and our Bhakti Vedanta, I just want 100 slokas because that's what Atul said to me. So basically, I think there's about, might be 58 or something with the previous ones, and so I'll add the rest of them and no more than that. But so I'm in the process of doing that now.
Okay,
so I'll get back to you. I'll send you a copy of that list.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the verse that's coming up next week can be a memory verse.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there are one or two.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, there are a couple in there. And so
the one we covered.
But we'll get into that next week.
Yeah.
So
Jai. Do I push a button or do I just hide under the desk?
You just say hang up. You're more powerful. You can say mute all. If everyone's keep talking, you just say mute all, then everyone.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah.
Gives you a lot of.
Oh, that's good. A lot of power. The jnana, the bala, the kriya, it's all here, the fingertips.
I think the meeting ended itself because we scheduled only a.
Right, a certain time, and then.
Well, probably I'll extend it to 5.
Right,
15
maybe. Yeah, okay, yeah.
But yeah, I've created the username for you. Right. That's the password that I gave you.
Yeah.